Anna, again, seems to be fascinated by people who survive under the most extreme circumstances. She made a trilogy of award-winning films about Rwanda, the last of which, My Neighbor, My Killer, was just accepted for the Cannes Film Festival. But she's here now to talk about her latest work, Ice People, which looks at an altogether different kind of extreme, Antarctica. She follows a small group of geologists living and exploring in one of the most remote places on Earth, offering a glimpse of a side of science that is rarely seen. Ice People opens for theatrical run today at Anthology Film Archives at 32 2nd Avenue, and it will be broadcast on the Sundance Channel on May 5th. And I'm very pleased that it brings Anna again back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Your last films have been about genocide in Rwanda. What got you interested in making something a lot gentler, but in the most extreme circumstances in Antarctica?
You know, it's interesting because in hindsight, I realized that I went to Antarctica as a way to be able to continue to make the films on Rwanda. When I set out for Antarctica or on that project, I knew I still had, you know, 2 or 3 years to go in Rwanda, I was already 6 years in, and you know these kinds of films on the aftermath of the genocide take a huge toll on you, and so
being there in the most extreme climatic circumstances,
it's a complete different effect that it has on you. But it was going to Antarctica was a breather. In a real way. And it was also about, you know, slowing down, having some quiet time. And that's really what the film is about.
These people have a lot of time on their hands.
That's right.
But the wind seems to be almost constant. And I know about wind chill factors. How cold is it before we factor in the wind chill factor?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we got there in August, which is the dead of winter. And we, on September 1st, they do this thing called Happy Camper School to train you for survival training in case the helicopters go down or whatever. And September 1st, they did Happy Camper School, especially for me and my crew. There were three of us. And they had never done it that early. And we went out camping on the ice shelf. And when we came back, you know, I was digging and to anchor the tent. And at one point, I had to strip because I had been sweating so much, I was getting cold. So I stripped. And the next day, when we went back to McMurdo, people said it had been between 60 and 70 below without the wind chill.
And you had taken off your clothes.
And I had taken off my clothes. And I was like, what was I thinking exactly? Yeah.
Well, can that be dangerous?
It would have been dangerous in that particular situation to keep my wet clothes on.
On the other hand, more shocking is that you were staying in a tent. These people stay in tents. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that they would have stayed at least in something a little more solid because you can keep it warmer, can't you?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, the scientists who used to go to Antarctica used to stay in tents much more than they do today. And Alan Ashworth and Adam Lewis and their two students with whom I was are really part of an old style kind of scientist who, you know, still believe in roughing it in a way.
What about equipment? Doesn't equipment freeze up in that kind of cold?
You mean filming equipment?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We had all sorts of contraptions to make sure it wouldn't freeze. We had heat packs that we would put in the cases at night to make sure that, you know, the equipment would stay warm. You'd keep your batteries next to your body because the batteries is what suffers the most, and your body heat would keep them warm, you know, that kind of stuff.
Antarctica, we think of as just an ice sheet covering a landmass, but the landscape that I see in this film appears to be rocky ground with some light snow covering.
Yeah. When I set out to make this film, I really wanted to sort of shift from the blinding snow and the blinding ice.
And the penguins. No penguins in this film.
Not.
Only humans.
That's right.
Are there other animals other than penguins around?
There are, birds, and there are seals, and there are whales and orcas and things like that. When we got there, though, it was August, so there was nothing around. And when we went up, so the film takes place for the, you know, most of the film, the 2 months that we spent in camping with the geologists takes place up in the mountains. And that's why it's, you know, it's rocky terrain. It's a place that has no ice. 2% of Antarctica has no ice, and that's part of the 2%. And when we were up, you know, 5,000-6,000 feet high, there were no animals either. I saw my first bird after 4 months, in December when we went back down to McMurdo.
Now, December being the summertime.
Being the height of summer, yeah.
Because it's in the southern hemisphere. Mm-hmm. What are these geologists, there are four scientists, three men and a woman, what are they doing down there?
Well, they're looking for fossils they find fossils of leaves and twigs and bugs and things like that. And those fossils, along with ash, which helps them date things, help them determine whether, you know, when Antarctica froze, essentially. I think the way my...
It hasn't always been frozen?
It has not. There used to be shrubby, it was like a tundra, shrubby little plants. I think, the way they described it to me was that on a warm day, it might be 45, 50, 55 or something like that at the time. And
but that,
we're talking 20 million years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 15 to
but
20 million
years.
But
this is the equivalent of a desert, isn't it?
It's actually the driest desert on Earth, yeah, absolutely.
How do they get their supplies? And what do they eat everything out of cans?
Well, it was very interesting. We had two cook tents. They had their own cook tent and we had our own cook tent. There were four and we were three. And, you go in McMurdo, before you leave, you go to this place, which is like a huge warehouse full of food. And you choose what you're going to take with you and you pack it all up and you take some of it with you and then it's resupplied. We ate gourmet food in the filmmaker's tent, and we actually invited each other to dinner, and they were very happy to come to our place.
I'd imagine. How long do these people stay there to do this work?
Well, they were there for 2 months, a little under 2 months.
You can really get on each other's nerves, can't you?
I think you certainly can.
Four people?
Mm-hmm.
And what Kelly, one of the undergraduate researchers, talks about the challenges of being with the same small group of people all the time because they tend to tell the same stories over and over again.
Right. That's right. She says, there's nothing to talk about because we all do the same thing every day. Yeah, and it's true. And that's one of the things that I wanted to show in the film was how you sort of live through this experience of just, the cold and working all day and not finding or finding and all being together. It was part of the, sort of the boredom and the drudgery kind of thing. But at the same time, the film is, will show you, you'll see incredible landscapes that nobody, very few people will ever get a chance to see. I mean, there's an incredible sense of privilege that these scientists have and that I had at being able to spend time there.
And you're doing two things here. You're showing us this incredible environment and beautifully shot. I guess high definition today is not what it used to be.
Well, we shot in real high definition. In other words, with a big Sony F900 camera, not the little high definitions of today. Sylvester Guidi, the cameraman, did, terrific work. I also wanted to convey the silence and the sound of the wind, and that was very, very important to me. Richard Fleming, the sound guy, I kept on asking him, "Did you get that silence? Did you get that silence?" And he said, "There's nothing to record. There's literally nothing to record." So we actually had to, in post-production, in the sound mix, we sort of created some silence, which was a lot of fun.
one of the reviews wrote that Ice People is as much a character study as it is a science lesson. You must have found these people really well. It takes a certain kind of person to put him or herself through this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sense I have certainly of Alan and Adam, who were Alan Ashworth and Adam Lewis, who are the seasoned scientists there, is that they're sort of like kids in a sandbox out there. You know, there's this joy of the discovery, which is extraordinary after weeks and weeks of looking. You know, you really, it's contagious. There's really something that you want to be a part of it.
Well, it at times their work doesn't look like science. It looks like they're constructing a road or something because it's so hands-on.
Yeah, they dig and dig and dig.
You show what seems to be a sort of town with warehouses, huge tractors, even lights and telephone poles. Where was that?
That's McMurdo Station.
That's where everybody comes initially?
Yeah. McMurdo Station is the main U.S. station on the continent. And when we got there, there were about, we arrived on the first plane of the season. And there had been 200 people who had just spent the winter 6 months alone in total isolation.
Is that a typical population of Antarctica?
In the winter in McMurdo, it's between 100 and 200. And then in the summer, it goes up to 1,200, I think, more or less, 900 to 1,200 in McMurdo. And it is like it's like an Alaska mining town.
But you could have gone with another group. What led you to choose these people?
I really wanted to spend time in what is called the deep field, and to spend a long time with a small group of people. And in fact, as I was researching going down there, I found that there were fewer and fewer of these groups of scientists who go for long periods and far away from the station.
Whenever we talk about climate change, we talk about the North Pole and the South Pole and the melting ice cap. Did you see any signs of climate change when you were down there?
No, I couldn't. I think you have to compare from year to year. You have to, I mean, that's what these scientists do, is, you know, they record data. But to the novice eye, there's nothing really to see. I didn't.
And they didn't talk to you about that?
Sure. No. Of course, they talked about it. There's like a long view of things, you know. And of course they, you know, the, I mean, they're all concerned. I think in a very serious way.
Although, as you said, what they know now is that in an earlier time, this was a rather green place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were lakes and, you know, streams and rivers and.
Is that because Antarctica has moved as part of the shifting of the continents, or?
Yeah.
It is, because I can't imagine that the bottom of the planet would ever be green.
My understanding, and you know, I'm no scientist, so, but my understanding is there was this big continent called Gondwana, mm-hmm. which included Africa and South America and Australia and Antarctica, and about 35 million years ago, Antarctica broke off and slowly shifted south, and then at one point there was a current that became very strong around the Antarctic, which completely isolated it, an ocean current that completely isolated it from the rest of the world, you know, of the Earth. And now it's a continent, and it's cold.
Could you have done this without getting a grant? You got a grant from the Antarctic Artists and Writers.
Yeah, no. I mean, all the Antarctic programs are sort of off limits to, you know, regular people. So you have to go through basically government programs that run, Antarctica. And I went through the National Science Foundation Antarctic Artists and Writers Program, which is an extraordinary program that's existed for, I think, over 20 years. It's actually, I heard recently, in danger of being stopped which would be very, very sad.
But funding is drying up for so many important things.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What can we talk a bit about My Neighbor, My Killer? I mean, it's rare that a documentary even is accepted at the Cannes Film Festival. What was the process?
Well, it's very rare, and I'm incredibly honored to be a part of it. It's going to be in the official selection as a special screening. And the process is I sent it in, and I said, this is the 15th commemoration this year of the genocide, and it would be extraordinary to have this, you know, it would be an extraordinary political statement to have this film show. And here we are. I'm going in 2 weeks.
And the film will also be shown as part of the Human Rights Watch Film Festival at the Film Society of Lincoln Center in June.
That's correct, yeah.
Do you have a favorite of the three, or do we have to see all three to really understand the whole circuit, the whole story?
There's actually this My Neighbor, My Killer is actually a film that encompasses the trilogy. Mm-hmm. There's actually there's actually four films. There's the trilogy, which includes the first two, Gacaca, Living Together Again in Rwanda, and In Rwanda We Say, The Family That Does Not Speak Dies, and one that I just finished along with My Neighbor, My Killer, which is called The Notebooks of Memory, which focuses exclusively on the trials. And My Neighbor, My Killer encompasses the whole sweep of the almost 10 years that I spent filming in Rwanda.
One of the things that has surprised a lot of people is how smoothly the transition has occurred in Rwanda, considering how horrifying the situation 15 years ago.
I would, you know, temper that a little bit. I think there's, incredible double-digit growth in Kigali, the capital, but 90% of the people in Rwanda still live in rural settings, in the hillside communities. And I don't know to what extent they're, you know, being pulled by the double-digit growth of Kigali.
But what about the possibility of more bloodshed? Do you think that that would happen again?
You know, I'm not, it's very hard to tell.
Anne Aguillon's going to be appearing at a number of screenings at Anthology Film Archives tonight at 7 and 9, and then next Thursday. For details, go to our show page at WNYC.org, Ice People, which will also be broadcast on the Sundance channel on May 5th. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you very much for having me.